Hi everyone, and welcome to the RegTech Report, your update on all things RegTech. My name is Carl Viertel, and with me is Stefan Celestiel. And our mission is to bring you the latest news, speak with industry pioneers, and muse about the latest tech. All right, everyone, welcome back to the RegTech Report, and it is a very special episode because it is episode 10 of the RegTech Report, 10 full episodes. And with me, of course, is Stefan.
Hey, Carl, how are you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. We actually don't have any guests today, so it'll just be Stefan and myself.
Oh, a classic.
a classic episode, clearly. And we actually have a really exciting agenda today. So we want to talk about digital change because, let's face it, RegTech is digital technology. Adopting, using RegTech is essentially digital transformation for a number of our customers. And so we'd like to look at digital essentially from two phases. Phase one being, in our first segment, how we approach new organizations, what sort of challenges we face, what kind of conversations we have. And then sort of in the second segment, we want to look at some of the more typical challenges we face when during the transformation and actually adopting the technology. So an exciting show. And with that, I'd actually like to launch right into our digital change, or more sort of in the business development stage and the challenges that we identify there. Now, I was recently on a plane to the UK, and I find that sort of the time on the plane is really good to actually write blog posts because I can get it done in about 1.5 hours. You don't have a lot of elbow room, so it's something I need to do on the phone. And so I was thinking about sort of some of the experiences. Stefan, you were with me in a lot of these meetings we have when we encounter new organizations and sort of talk to them about what Align does. And now, not necessarily from a feature perspective, but more from a how do I bring this into the organization? And you and I, we were speaking, and we sort of identified four common patterns. Now, you know, from a sales perspective, you always think of buyer personas. So it's obviously a gross generalization, and everyone's unique, and every situation is unique, every organization is unique. But we did identify some patterns. And in the blog post, so it's on blog.align.com, you can read it up, we identified sort of four typical personas that we encounter. One is the visionary. Two, we call the worker bee. Three is the skeptic. And then there's usually, I call them the old school IT guy. Yes, it could be a girl, but let's face it, most of the time it is a guy.
Yeah, and in some ways, if I think about it now, it's not just digital, isn't it? It's you find maybe similar types of personas in any kind of change, you know, that maybe some are more for it, some are more against it, for various reasons. And that's what we try to analyze here.
Absolutely.
About this particular topic.
Yeah. And I mean, this is, you know, not obviously a criticism or of the position that these people are in, but more an identification of these are the situations that they face in an organization. And it's up to us, and of course all of our other RegTech compatriots out there that need to address that in a meaningful way to help them be successful, right? I mean, these aren't people that are, or we don't encounter people that are obstructionist or, you know, are malicious in any way, but they have a certain reality that they're essentially dealing with in their organization, and we need to help them. Yep. And so the visionary. Stefan, I'm sure you have sort of a few people in mind.
Without naming names, no.
So we usually encounter someone who's really excited, right? This person wants to get it done. You know, your typical running after every shiny thing and really excited about everything new. But, and, you know, this is probably where I recognize myself. You know, you might want to gloss over some details along the journey. And so I put together sort of, you know, obviously hyperbolic quotes from this typical persona. And I said, well, you know, we could completely change everything and then we'll just use machine learning and a chatbot to do XYZ. I'm sure you have some people in mind. How do you what do you think we need to address when dealing with the visionary?
Well, in the end, it's about the what is the promise, right? What is the opportunity? Because in the end, I find it striking the the parallels you have in terms of social styles, so this kind of driver persona, or also if you take disc model, like the red color. So kind of looking at getting ahead, yeah, both personally, but maybe also for the general big picture. And somebody like that, a visionary, really is thinking about what good can come out of it, and maybe disregarding a bit the risks and the challenges. So the what gets them excited is really, okay, what is the possibilities about the whole thing?
And I mean, obviously, they can be our biggest advocates, but obviously, the risk we also have is, you know, if it takes too long or there's too much obstruction, they'll just get bored and move on to the next.
Yeah.
So, you know, can be an advocate, but obviously need to be.
Timing is, I guess, again, essential for something else, right?
The next, obviously, would be, as mentioned before, the worker bees. Now, this might come over a bit too critical, right? Because obviously, these are often people that are very operational, and so any change they are most affected by in an adverse way. And now, one of the challenges that a lot of sort of the worker bees face is that there's no sort of incentivization, right? So while the big manager, you know, at the top of the business unit might have a KPI saying, oh, you know, I have to work with, you know, 5 digital technologies and do exciting stuff and be innovative, the people in middle management or that have, you know, more operational roles, they're just going to spend more time on something that they're not going to be, you know, get an, or they won't get a bonus for. So they're just not incentivized to in any way adapt something digital. But they also, of course, because they're so operational, they might not have the vision to or the understanding that you could get to the same outcome in a different way. And so, you know, a typical, obviously exaggerated quote might be, so why doesn't this solution look exactly like my spreadsheet?
Yep. Yeah, I can give you a perfect example of typically the discussions you have. Because the compared to the visioning, where you're really thinking more about the overall outcomes and how can you improve that, and then there's no sacred things in the middle. Yeah, typically even saying, we could like completely change how we do it. Somebody in the more like kind of transactional worker bee type tasks, they're really concerned about like the individual steps you have to do a certain process or activity, like where the button is, how the fields look, because this is the reality they have on a day-to-day basis. And looking at the whole activity, taking a step back and saying, is what I'm doing here overall, does that make sense or should it be changed? That's both. You don't think about this if you're in that position. It also carries risk and danger, yeah? Because it might be maybe the whole position or the task or the job is no longer required in this case if we just get rid of this process or change it completely.
Yeah. The next persona is a really interesting one. I call this persona the skeptic, simply because we've encountered this persona quite often, and it's someone who actually really likes change, really likes the aspect of doing something better, and is very critical of, you know, potentially inefficiencies or some things going on in the organization in that require manual intervention. But at the same time says, this is too different, and I don't think my organization is ready for this amount of change. Mm-hmm. So again, my quote would be, you know, I love it, but our business is so conservative. They just need a simple form that looks like the tool we've had for the last 15 years.
And ironically, somebody like that could have been a visionary before, but maybe they were ground down by the organization and kind of frustrated by what has happened.
Well, or again, simply just differently incentivized, right? Yeah. If you're reporting to someone that just says, you know, I need this operational process to run, no experiments, then you know, that person's not going to go out on a limb, not going to try something new, and is not going to experiment because operational pressure or risk aversion is just too high. And, you know, again, not something that you can blame this person for. It's the reality that they're dealing with. And last but not least, of course, sort of we've got the old school IT guy. Of course, that person is in a challenging environment, right? You know, he spent a career mostly. These are, tend to be slightly older. They've spent a career learning, you know, highly complex skills in operating IT within the perimeter, so to speak, and obviously being beaten for an entire career by a business that says you're too slow, you're too this, you're too that, and now all of a sudden everyone is just moving into the cloud, and of course the IT guy is saying, "Well, this is just a fad. I'll wait it out," the same way as I did SOA in the mid 2000s, and it'll go away. But, I think a lot of these people find that cloud will become inevitable, or a lot of digital technologies, such as machine learning, will enhance capabilities vastly beyond what's possible in the perimeter. And it's just a new reality this person has to face. But we need to provide them with the right arguments.
Yeah. And sometimes, what you can find is that even somebody who is in that position is showing all the classical signs and being this kind of skeptic on the IT side, that sometimes they become excited to be able to work with new technology because so far maybe it wasn't possible in the organization. And that can bring new energy if it's maybe shaped and framed in the right way. I think some of that stuff comes not just from being maybe stuck in an old technology world, but also if you look back at how culturally IT departments worked and kind of also in the intersections and interfaces with other departments, it was always very confrontational. Typically business departments saying, IT is stupid. They cost a lot of money and they are very slow, and IT says business doesn't know anything or something like that. And I think that's also a bit changing. And it's also the sign of maybe more modern organizations where there is not such a big divide between the two worlds, let's say.
I think the early 2000s were certainly influenced by a trend to say, we need to operate the IT as a profit center, and it basically needs to be an industrialized service provider that I can basically outsource or arbitrarily exchange for an outsourced service, and of course that leads to exactly the mentality that we see in a lot of the old school IT guys, that they've just been trained to operate as a service center as opposed to a real partner of the business. So, you can't entirely blame them. But now maybe for more of the solutions or the strategies of dealing with it and helping these individual personas along their digital transformation. So what are some strategies that have worked for you, Stefan?
So I think explanation is often useful. Sometimes it's tedious.
Mansplaining?
Yeah, well, or I don't know, alliance-planing maybe. Yeah. Because there might be, there are often concerns, if you're especially talking about this more skeptic type of personas, and sometimes they are like really valid concerns and you somehow need to address them. Sometimes it's just an emotional thing. Yeah? And then looking at it in a more rational way, that can help, and maybe kind of balancing out this kind of risk versus opportunity trade-off in the eyes of the individual person.
Now, I think actually that a lot of the discussion is, of course, emotional, right? I mean, the worker bee sees a huge new amount of change and work coming at the person instead of without really a personal incentive or upside to it. The IT guy simply sees more and more of his area of accountability and responsibility just sort of disintegrating. And the skeptic obviously doesn't know if good things are going to come of this. And so certainly bringing some fact and having those facts available, not coming, over or as sort of, the sleazy salesperson, I think is really important to really change hearts and minds and get to a more fact-based discussion around it.
Mm. Yeah, and maybe if you think about the concerns being brought up, this is often, there are patterns, right? It's not like always new things. It's things come up and you can prepare this. I mean, maybe as a recommendation to fellow RegTechs out there, there will be usually the same kind of questions coming up. And if you have white papers or so and documents to basically give answers around that, I think that already helps and shows that you are also professional and think about this also in advance.
Yeah, so one example of that, the German regulator BaFin came out with a sort of like a guidance on what to consider when leveraging cloud. And so we just took that paper and, you know, took each paragraph, each bullet point, and wrote a interpretation, a statement of how Align meets that or what that means in context of Align, right? And so immediately, if someone says, oh, we can't do cloud because the regulator says we can't, then we say, well, actually, let's take a look at what the regulator said, and we've thought about that, and here's our opinion, right? So it's, again, it's bringing fact into the discussion. Another thing that has worked pretty well is, especially for the worker bee that is obviously very focused on the operational aspect, is that we've taken a or tried to understand as much as possible of the current process ahead of time, and then replicated that in the solution, so that when the worker bee essentially sees what we're proposing, what we're demonstrating for the first time, they'll see as much as humanly possible of their current process and the terminology they know, and it sort of reduces the I guess the foreignness or the unfamiliarness with the digital with the digital change. All right, so let's say we're now in the phase where we've successfully placed the digital solution in an organization, and we're now sort of in the digital adoption phase, right? So convincing hearts and minds, not just of the involved people, but actually of the entire organization. Now, our producer, Bailey, has found some really cool stats on this. So McKinsey first says that data-driven organizations are 23 times more likely to acquire customers. Those organizations that that marshal their data to produce better insights develop a better understanding of how to find and keep customers happy. Now, I'm wondering, is that too vague, or is that actually meaningful in context of digital change?
Well, it's part of it, isn't it? I mean, the whole data science, big data discussion is about gaining insights from all the transactional data you have. And to be able to do that, you actually have to kind of gather that at some point in time. And if you like really think about the base source about it, if you don't have a digital process, how can you gather data points on the way?
Yeah, so I saw this tweet from, I don't know, someone in the RegTech blogosphere writing something of data is the new oil. And I basically responded saying, well, I'd say data is probably the new crude oil. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the big tankers can barely trudge along using crude oil. But I'd say contextual data and meaningful data, that's high-octane racing fuel that actually gets you ahead. So I kind of like to distinguish a little bit and say, well, contextual data, because just massive amounts of data lying around is not going to get you 23 times more likely to do something awesome.
Yeah, you need to understand what is important and what not. That's always the challenge.
And then I actually learned a new term, RPA. Do you know what it means?
No.
So robotic process automation. So essentially digitalization of processes. But, you know, we're getting the word robots in there, so that's cool. So Deloitte robot brought out a third annual RPA survey. And so it says 53% of survey respondents are beginning their RPA journey. So and 78% plan to invest more in the next 3 years. So clearly digitalization, but beyond that, of course, automation is on a huge agenda, is a huge agenda point for lots of organizations. Kind of not surprising, but I guess also lays out a huge amount of work for organizations in bringing that change to their people.
Yeah, and I think maybe a change to what was before. I mean, for many decades, people have built IT systems to support their processes, right? But what do you still see a lot is these kind of breaks at different steps and handovers, and that's creating a lot of friction and delays and waste, and kind of plugging this in a more integrated fashion is, I think, the biggest change we've seen now lately.
Yeah. And then there was another factoid that I found from the 2018 Digital Transformation Index, where this study found that 37% said digital transformation helped create new jobs, and another 30% said it had no change at all. So 67% say no, either the same or more jobs. So the whole myth of, machines will replace us all, and digital transformation means just cutting jobs, kind of not true.
Yeah, maybe that still comes. I don't know. maybe that development, we're still ahead of that curve, but not in the short term.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that that we've obviously always articulated is that, for example, a line doesn't mean that you can let half of your risk staff go. It actually just means half of your risk staff is doing now a lot smarter things with their time than massaging spreadsheets. So, you know, I tend to agree that this, 67% actually sees more opportunity for jobs and, quite frankly, smarter and better jobs. And finally, for this segment, the news. And we were actually just talking about it in the last segment, jobs being cut. Now, for us here in Germany, the massive bombshell that dropped this week, Deutsche Bank is slashing 18,000 jobs globally.
Yeah. And I'm amazed how much this is in the mainstream press now. Everybody seems to be surprised. Anybody who's been watching that situation for the last years, it should not have come as a surprise because Deutsche Bank has been having problems for quite a while. And this is, I think, now just a very visible symptom of the whole situation.
Yeah, I mean, it is still very, very bold. Yeah. I mean, for, you know, a bank that's been stable and huge and, the monolithic figure of German banking, essentially, that's pretty significant.
Yeah, and some people are putting in the headlines, it's like the last chance what they're trying here now. And I would agree. And I'm not convinced this will actually work, what they're trying to do. I always keep joking, okay, they're kind of reducing themselves to the size of a regional player or something like that. And it's really going in that direction. I'm not sure what will happen. But there have been some interesting side notes in the announcement. They're also restructuring the board. Yeah? A couple of people are leaving. Some people are changing their jobs. And one of the items that's somehow hidden and touches also actually our last segment is that they are moving the person responsible for digital transformation to a full board position, and kind of putting the tone from the top on that whole topic.
Certainly not a bad move. My next news item, similarly large organization and quite a bombshell. So we all heard of the British Airways data breach in the past year. Now the Information Commissioner's Office in the UK fined £183 million. Now, that hurts even an organization the size of British Airways.
And this was under GDPR, wasn't it? Or what was the fine?
I believe so. It's a bit tragic because, of course, it was a malicious attack. It wasn't just data lying around, but it was vulnerable and mistakes were made. And so the regulator there said 183 million. So, I mean, that's...
And what I understand from the few details that are out there, I think there was basically a situation of gross negligence in certain ways and something that could have been prevented by just doing like proper due care, of established best practices or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's sort of, what we were always discussing, and that's what's always been our opinion in these GDPR fines is that, it's if you just, don't have a specific control fully implemented, you're not going to get clobbered over the head with fines. But it's, if you're deliberately negligent in how you're dealing or being a good custodian of people's data, that's when regulators would get mad. So certainly for the UK, quite a landmark.
Yeah, and also interesting that the ICO is becoming kind of champion of this, because in the past regime before GDPR, it wasn't really that visible across the data protection privacy world, wasn't it?
Last but not least, also a really interesting tidbit in the news, Refinitiv. So for those that don't know, it's a sort of fintech-y, I'd say. It's not really a fintech because it is parts of it are actually quite old, but it's a carve-out out of Thomson Reuters that was mainly purchased by BlackRock. And so they're, you know, operating sort of like a fintech within more or less the confines of a large organization. But they just announced a partnership with Finergo, an Irish, I guess they're RegTech, right?
Yeah.
For some really sleek KYC processing. And the reason that I bring this up is I think it's a really interesting move from a large corporate to say we're going to, you know, essentially spin out something, set it up like a mature fintech, and then leverage best of breed services to, you know, really get going and essentially start from a greenfield-ish approach. So really cool approach to that challenge.
Yeah, awesome developments.
And that leads us to our final part of the show, the top three.
Hey, oh!
Top three.
It's the
top three.
A jingle, though.
And Stefan, today, basically following on to the first segment where we're basically sharing some of our insights from our business development or sales discussions, we want to talk about the top three reasons why someone says they can't use cloud. Do you want to start out with your number three?
Yeah, so, I mean, the classic is, and this is getting less and less, but it was more the last year, so something around, but I'm concerned about something like privacy, security, or something like that. It's much better when we do this ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, I think cloud services are getting so mature that that's seldomly a good argument. My number three is, the regulator won't allow us. And quite frankly, I haven't come across a regulator that says you can't. Yeah. They just said, well, you need to address it as you would outsourced service. You need to have appropriate controls, and it's your risk-based decision to make.
Yeah.
But it seems a lot easier in a meeting to just say, we can't do cloud.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of these emotional things, right? And then if you start asking what exactly and who said that, this it kind of starts falling apart. Regulators have been, in the past, maybe it was a bit vague because there was not often very specific guidance around this, but this has changed in the last months or even 1 or 2 years. And more regulators, especially also in the financial world, have come out with specific cloud guidance around the requirements they have. I mean, some are maybe sometimes a bit challenging depending on what kind of cloud service you have, but it's basically a continuation of what they've always been saying for any kind of IT service or outsourcing that regulated entities have done in the past.
Yeah, and side note on that, I was at an event a couple days ago in London with a representative from the Bank of England, and the Bank of England will come out with some guidance on cloud usage, they said, later in 2019. So really interested in hearing their approach. But just from sort of what was said, it sounded very much like what BaFin here in Germany is saying, which is it's not a no, but it's kind of your decision, and we'll see what we think.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, these regulators talk to each other, right? And there's some bodies where they basically align, something like EBA or Basel Committee and so on. So it's not surprising that similar stuff comes out in different countries.
Stefan, you're number two.
So maybe a bit related to that, what you just said is also around, but what about, you know, the other countries, you know, something like the US, the NSA will spy on me if I put it into a US-based service.
Yeah.
And then they just have all my data.
Yeah, my favorite argument is if Iran purchases airlocked centrifuges in some data center in the desert or some research center in the desert, and you can bring malware on it, why do you think that they, you know, a malicious government entity could not attack your own data center right underneath your building.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, especially, I mean, in that kind of situation, right? And then considering what kind of security level most organizations have in their own data centers compared to maybe the top of the line you can get as cloud services, there really is this question, where is it more secure? And on the other hand, you might have something like there's maybe some court decision in the other country, and the cloud provider has to give out the data. But then if you're a multinational company, which many of our customers are, then you might have a location anyway already in that country, and they could just send that letter also directly to you.
Agreed. My number two is, we can't move data across borders. Again, in very, very, very few cases is that actually written anywhere. It seems to just sort of be a gut feel. But quite frankly, there are ways of doing it. And also intended ways. I mean, GDPR deliberately says you can share data throughout the European zone. And then, of course, there's the entire aspect of, well, actually, for this, we're only talking about PII, so personally identifiable information from privacy law. We're not talking about all the other data that we might be addressing with our RegTech solution. So it's also kind of not based in fact.
Yeah, and this kind of whole topic of this data residency is somehow kind of feels like trying to put a physical concept into the digital world and the globalized world.
And nicely said.
I'll quote you on that. When it's somewhere in the laws for various reasons, if you really look into it, there might be some very specific things a local regulator, like, I don't know, in Finland, Switzerland or something like that might say, you know, or we've seen that in the Middle East. But it's usually not for everything. And then, like, just looking again at the facts kind of resolves that situation rather quickly.
Stefan, your number one reason that people quote us why they can't use cloud.
So the number one reason is not something anybody would ever admit, but I think it's the underlying reason is the kind of quote, I don't really understand cloud. And I think that's often the case. Maybe if you think about the persona again from the IT person who grew up in the kind of previous paradigm. And in a lot of ways, cloud is... there's some technical differences that are maybe not even that large, but the way you operate something like this is quite different.
Yeah.
And I think that's, again, education and really talking about the details and what it means. I think that solves that problem.
And my number one reason why people tell us why they can't go to cloud is I always need to know exactly where my data is or I can't protect it. I think that sort of goes to your applying a physical concept to a digital world. I mean, I think, yes, it's I guess, mentally pleasing to see a fence around something and say, I can't jump over that fence and therefore my data is secure. Unfortunately, that's just not the reality.
Yeah, and I mean, just asking anybody like, okay, please point me to your data now in your data center, and probably they won't even have an answer for that.
Well, and I mean, that's the same thing, right? I mean, think of if you're leveraging a cloud solution and you actually think that the attack vector is someone breaks into the data center and starts pulling out hard disks and therefore is going to get access to your data. I mean, that would actually be an interesting challenge to say, fine, you know, I don't know, I've stored a Bitcoin wallet password that has a million euros on it and go into this data center and try and find it. I honestly don't know if that's physically possible across five layers of virtualization and of course, hard disk encryption on multiple layers. I mean, it's just so unlikely that it's a complete misrepresentation of the actual attack vector.
Yeah, plus you can, of course, put mitigating controls in place, right? So, I mean, classic would be some kind of encryption. But again, also people kind of misunderstand that this is not just like single silver bullet solutions. This is everything you typically do in IT controls that we also have in the Align platform. It doesn't just stop with something like putting encryption in place, but it's all the things around like access control, change management and so on. And the only thing that really, it's really everything people have been doing before. The only thing that changes a bit is like who's responsible for which parts and being very clear on who's taking care of what part. And I think that's much much better with cloud, also because you're just forced to do it. You have to do it, otherwise you can't really operate something like this.
Well, I think that these opinions are probably going to get fewer and more far between as we continue our discussions, and as cloud services just become more prevalent, even in large enterprises. But it was still fun going through some of the typical things we hear.
I mean, one final thought also on the persona of the old IT guy. Sometimes this can be exactly the thing that gets them excited, because suddenly they might have an opportunity to work with something new and modern. And also seeing how easy certain things are that caused them a lot of pain in the old world. Like deployments, for example.
RegTech reducing pain. Yeah. I like that. And with that, we're going to close out our 10th episode of the RegTech Report. Stay tuned. We've got some really cool things planned for the next episodes. And we look forward to engaging with you in a discussion on Twitter, on LinkedIn. Follow us. Write us. We'd love to have you on the pod. Thanks for listening. Let's continue the conversation on Twitter. Follow our dedicated podcast handle, @TheRegTechRep. Make sure to rate this podcast and send your thoughts and comments to theRegTechReport@Align.com. Once again, that's theRegTechReport@Align.com. You can also follow Align on LinkedIn, Facebook, or Twitter, or catch up on our podcasts on Align.com/TheRegTechReport.